Five intruders, 4 hours, three floors, two exits, one problem. Not only that, there's a deranged psychiatric patient who escapes from the hospital, and Daddy, she's hell-bent on revenge. I'm joined by Mike McGlynn, one of the dirty no-gooders in the upcoming indie horror Go Away, and the slasher nurse. And it's going down right here on Slasher Sports Cinema.
I'm here to kill you.
I am Dracula.
You say that I have shed innocent blood. What's blood for, if not for shedding?
Six-year-old child with this blank, pale, emotionless face, the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes.
Michael McGlynn, you handsome devil, come on in here.
Oh, gosh.
Calm down. How are we going, man?
Oh, awesome, man. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm living large. Not as large as that mustache, though, and I'm freaking digging it. I can't do it. I try to do it, and what I'll do is I'll let it grow like this, and then I'll shave the beard off and just leave the stash, and you know, I can just hear those ice cream trucks. I hear them a little bit better. So it's like, I'm going to just go grow this back. And then I start from zero. it's not a good feeling. I'm no Tom Selleck like you, sir. it just doesn't come in thick. You know, my dad had a thick mustache. And it just almost looked natural. Looked like he couldn't go without it. You know, looked like he didn't belong unless he had that. It was like a caterpillar living on his lip. But me, it just looks all patchy and just gross. You know, like I couldn't get a table for one at Chuck E. Cheese. So
yeah, the same problem with my beard, man. If I try growing a beard, it gets all splotchy. It's just like, oh, don't worry. One of these days, you'll hit puberty all the way through. It's coming.
And puberty doesn't come. It just doesn't come, right? Well, man, I want to thank you very much for taking time to come onto the show. And, your name had come up in a few conversations prior to you even booking, you know, or you even being booked on the show. A few different, we've got some, we'll just say common friends. And, all of them speak highly of you except for one. And I'm just kidding. No, nobody's ever said anything bad. It was Steve Merlot. But not true at all. But before we get into anything, man, we've got to talk about some films that were released on this day in horror movie history. And I've been waiting to talk about this one because I didn't even realize that the anniversary was coming up, and I guess I looked at my schedule for content dropping, you know, and I have some previous episodes of a previous podcast that I worked on for about a year and some change with some good friends called Slashers and Screamers. And I set over the course of the year for random episodes to drop, audio episodes from episodes that we did. We would just kind of in a tongue-in-cheek manner, just give loose reviews of these films that we loved and maybe just remind people that they also love horror and just forgot about it along the way. But that film, and it happens to be my all-time favorite film, my all-time favorite horror film. Unless you consider The Wizard of Oz a horror film, and it could very well be.
It's borderline.
It is, isn't it borderline? You got witches. You've got legends of dead bodies in the background. I don't know. It's Depends on who you believe.
Yeah. I mean,
and if you drop enough acid and listen to, you know, Dark Side of the Moon at the same time as watching, it could very well scare you shitless. So we'll say on another day that it's a horror film, but today my favorite all-time horror film turns, I guess, 39 or 40 years old. I was born in 82. I'm 40. This film came out in 81, so I guess that makes it 41. 42. I'm sorry, because I'll be 41 in June. So Friday the 13th part 2 turns 42 years old today, and I can't talk enough about it, Mike. You said prior to coming on that you are also a big fan of this film.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, part 2, in my opinion, is what paved the way for the rest of the franchise. I mean, I will never take anything away from part one. Part one was gorgeous. It was perfect the way it was meant to be done. But with the ending of that, and they wanted to continue it on, you had to find, like, you know, some angle to go with. And with Jason and, like, and just even the progression of him, like, you know, that was the beginning of, like, more of the human-formed Jason, like, more of the deformation, but still natural. And that was played by the absolutely amazing Steve Dash. I've got to meet him before. I actually met him about 6 months prior to him passing away. He was one of the most nicest gentlemen I ever got to meet. Just very warm to all the fans and just absolutely loved talking about Friday the 13th. I mean, it wasn't a gig for him. It was a passion. You could tell it. He loved it, and there was nothing more he would care more about doing at that event than talking about it. And that says a lot right there. When they were in something and they want to sit down and talk to you about all the great things that happened on it, you know that was a good film, and that's one close to their heart.
I mean, it's definitely close to my heart because it's what got me into horror to begin with. I don't know if something else would have done it. It probably would have, but this is the one that did it. And I've told the story a million times, and I know that anybody who's listened to more than one episode of Slasher Sports Cinema or Slashers and Screamers was probably tired of hearing it, but it's new to you, so you're going to hear it. When I was about 4 years old, you know, I don't come from like a high income family or anything like that. And both parents, blue collar, and you know, my stepdad, who's been around since I was 2, so, you know, he's got dad status. You know, he's, you know, he and my mom, when they could afford to have date night once every, I don't know, month or so, they would go to a neighboring city called Gallatin, Tennessee, and they would go to this restaurant that is no longer a thing, and it was called Bonanza, okay? And Bonanza ended up being Ponderosa. And Ponderosa ended up being gone. So back in the day, though, Bonanza was kind of the spot. You know, they had the little the buffet and just like cooked to order steaks. It was kind of a happening place. So one day I'm walking through the living room, and of course they scurry me along because there's just some scary shit happening on TV that I'm not supposed to look at as a 4 year old kid. It might have been a little bit younger than 4, but I don't think I was, because I don't remember knowing how to operate a VCR before I was 4 years old. But be that as it may, there were times where I would go with the parents and go on that date night with them, you know. But there were times where I didn't go, and maybe I didn't go because I wanted to sneak in their closet and find that movie that they didn't want me to watch. So they go on date night. I'm only there with my sister. I go into the bedroom. I kind of push everything out of the way. I push the adult films out of the way. You know, I didn't, as a 4 year old, I didn't care anything about Indiana Jones or Rambone. I didn't care about those. I cared about that one with the silver strip on the front with the blue lettering that probably said Friday the 13th part 2 on it, but I didn't know because I couldn't read at the time. I'm too young to know. But I popped this thing in. But let me tell you how savvy of a kid I was, though. You remember when you hold the a video cassette, you see how much tape is on each side, right? So you know when it's fully rewound. Well, long story short, I put in the tape, I saw where it was, and that's where I knew where to rewind it back to after I finished the movie. So that's, you know, right here. So they leave, I put the film on, and I'm just mesmerized, man. Watching through the cracks of my fingers, you know, I've got my blanket pulled over my head, and I can remember vividly, thinking that maybe it's this crazy old guy riding the bicycle who's killing everybody. It's got to be him. But then you see him disappear. You know, he gets it against that tree. So I'm just, the suspense has got me, you know. And to this day, I'll always remember that first viewing, man. Can you remember the first time that you saw the film?
Oh, I do, actually. I was 10 years old, I believe. And I remember it so clearly because, and this is another reason why Friday 13th is such a warm spot in my body. Horror-wise in general, I'd say probably the Universal Monsters is where I got my start from. But Friday the 13th was my first ever slasher film that I got to watch a slasher film of. And my mom was completely against it. And my dad was like, no, honey, let him do it. It will scare him so bad that what will happen is that he'll never want to watch another horror movie again.
Perfect logic.
And so my mom was like, all right, fine, go ahead, go and watch it. And it just happened to be one of those like block things where like Friday night they're playing part one. Saturday they were doing two and three, and then I think it was on Sunday they were playing part four, and I think part five was out at that point too. But I got to see him and watch part one, and I was just mesmerized. And then got up the next morning, went to go have breakfast with the parents. My mom was hoping to hear the worst, and she's like, "So, how was the movie last night?" And my response while I'm missing me goes, "Oh my God, that was so great! Can I stay up tonight and watch the sequels?"
Backfire.
Yep.
But it's good logic. You know, the parents used to do that to kids who were, I guess, interested in smoking. You know, mm-hmm. well, here, try it. And then, you know, you're suffocating there on the front porch. And so I never want to try that again. Well, exactly. That didn't really work out so well either. But, I mean, I'm with you, though. It's kind of the reverse psychology thing that they didn't realize would happen. Scurrying me out of the room is what did it. Yep. Allowing you to watch the film is what did it. And the thing about part two is part two is really the last one where they weren't campy whatsoever. Even part three had parts of the film where they got a little bit into the comedy too much.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it wasn't as bad as like four and five. You know, that paintball trio from, I believe it was part five, that was, you know, bananas. So, like, that was probably the epitome of the camp in Friday the 13th. So, that's kind of where it started to lose me. But, I mean, it brought me back in, you know. So, it all was not lost. There are parts, sequels in the franchise that other people might say are just terrible, like part five. I happen to love part five. In fact, part five might be, you know, my fourth favorite one. It ain't number four either. So yeah, I love part five for different reasons, but I really like to go back to when there was absolutely no campiness in the film. And I think a lot of it had to do with hearing the sounds of Harry Manfredini, who put together such an amazing score where every sound in the film meant something. From the scene where Mark gets the machete across the face and goes down the stairs in the wheelchair, just the overall sounds of the ambience of the film. You know, he didn't miss at all, and it could never be duplicated. Even when using the same music in the films, it could never be duplicated, because these were the first times we were hearing, you know, those sounds. Part one used the music, but part two, man, just had everything go right. And you had the archetypes, you know, the camp counselor archetypes that are, you know, basically what they did in part two is why you have the archetypes in video games, probably.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got the head counselor who can do no wrong. He's just a clean cut do-gooder who saves the girl until the girl saves him. You've got the athlete. Now, the athlete was a little bit different here. The athlete was Mark, the wheelchair-bound guy. But he's out there just crushing ass on that arm wrestling, unbeatable. You know, you got the flirty girl. You got the hot girl, which would have been why can't I think of her name? The one with the booty shorts.
Oh God. Was it? No. I want to say it was Anne.
No. Vicky is the one with the brown panties that everybody makes fun of. Say that again.
Yeah, it was Vicky. It was Mark. The girl with the boots. Oh, that was Terry.
Terry, thank you. Terry had the muffin shirt and the puppy, yep. And she. I mean, listen, they basically carbon copied her and put her on the video game with like maybe a different hairstyle.
Oh, I agree.
These are all memorable characters, and then poor old Marta Kober. Showing up to set at 16 years old, does a nude zine before anybody knows she's 16. And they're like, nah, I think we're going to have to cut this. And then she just ends up being, you know, just regular chick. But she and Jeff are like the favorite couple from this mm-hmm. film. And you hate to see them go. And man, the film was just perfect in every way for me, even with dialogue. Jenny does the thing where she sets, and I don't know if we were meant to really think this much into it, but the final scene where she puts on the sweater and, you know, basically mesmerizes Jason with, you know, talking as if she were Pamela. She's talking earlier in the bar about maybe he's, you know, she's a child psychology major, right? I don't think everybody picks up on that. And it just doesn't come to her to put on the sweater and pretend to be a mom, you know, but this film, Mike, is the reason I love horror, and today it turns 42 years old.
Kind of makes you really wonder, too, because I read about that. The original plan for part three was they were going to bring Amy Steele back, and they were actually going to bring back the guy who played Ted, the Practical Joker, redhead guy. To come back to try to end the curse and the cycle. When there's a new camp going on. And I actually would have really liked to have seen that. I mean, don't get me wrong. They did a great job with how they cut it with part three. You know, they made it seem like, oh, well, that was this night. Now here's literally the next morning. I mean, because a lot of people don't pick up on that. Part two, part three, and part four all literally happened within about a 3-4 day span. So like all those kills from those three movies all happened in under a week. If you do a timeline, that's a really big mass killing right there.
That is a body count right there. Okay. Like a 4-day, 5-day window, and you've got dozens of bodies now.
Oh yeah.
Let's say there are 8 kills per film. That's 32 bodies, you know, come on. That's why, yeah, timeline's really important there. Timeline's also really important when it comes to suspending your disbelief at the height of Jason, because he seems to grow like 4 to 6 inches overnight between part two and part three. But we're just going to forgive that because it's such a great film. And, you know, you brought up Steve Dash, who, you know, fantastically played the part of Jason in part two. Let's not forget about Warrington Gillette as well, who I believe he's the one who crashed through the window at the end and grabbed Jenny, right? So, but it's interesting that you brought up Ted and Amy Steele, Jenny, for part three. I would love to see another Ted flick. Ted was great. We didn't get enough Ted.
I agree. I mean, he was one of those ones where, like, I was actually okay and content with it. I was like, well, if they're leaving him at the bar and he's going out somewhere to drink, the likelihood he's going to walk out of this alive is getting better. And I wanted to see him live. I would have been upset if Ted got it. I love this humor. I mean, part of it is like Ted felt like a reflection of what I am. Like, especially when I'm on set, I'm the goofball. I'm the practical joker. I'm generally the one that either makes jokes, usually at my own expense, because I'm a firm believer that no one can get offended at a joke when you make yourself the butt of the joke. Only one person can be offended at that point, and that's me. And I'm not going to be offended by it.
You're not going to cancel yourself, right? That's an interesting way to look at it, because maybe as a kid, I saw myself as that as well. And I never really thought about it until now. You know, Ted's the guy that we, you love him because he's the prankster. He's the comic relief. And, you know, I like to get out there and, you know, maybe give somebody a jump scare, you know, and, you know, Ted was that guy. So yeah, seeing him come back, he probably would have gotten it in part three though.
You're probably right. I as much as I loved his character, he didn't have that X factor that grants you the pass to live normally. I mean, the first time I think I saw that one, where I was like, oh, you went against the X factor. I think it was probably for me. I think Cabin in the Woods, when the stoner actually is the one that survived.
You know, and Cabin in the Woods though purposely took those tropes and, you know, went in different directions. And, you know, when a horror film started to get a little bit more meta, you started seeing those breaks in the norm, I guess, you know. And that's a, you know, sometimes, you know, it's the most predictable thing that the girl's going to live. You know, there's a girl who's going to live. You don't often see the girl get it at the end and then the boyfriend live. Right. I'd like to see more of that, you know, a little bit more manpower, you know, where are men's rights in horror? That's what I want to know. Oh, wait, we're the ones doing the killing. Shit. Never mind. Let me just back off that. But we're not the ones doing the killing in all the movies, though, are we, Mike?
Oh, absolutely.
We're going to talk about one later on where that's not the case.
Yeah, we definitely know. We definitely know of one lady out there, or a few ladies.
Yeah, it's not called the slasher doctor, is it? It's called the slasher nurse, and not that women can't be doctors. What am I even... That was just a false equivalency. I don't even know why I said that. I'll edit it out later. We're live. Whatever. Listen, Mike, you know, we talked about Friday the 13th Part 2. But there's another film that I want to tell you about. It also dropped on May 1st, back in 1987, I believe. It might have been 89. It was filmed back in 84, I think. So it might have been 84 and 89. 84 and 87 doesn't sound right. But this film was filmed in 84, finally released in 1989. Okay, and this one's called Blood Rage. And you know Blood Rage, man.
Oh, yeah. That one's an unspoken classic, in my opinion.
The things that they did almost should, as an independent filmmaker yourself, at least being as involved as you can be in all junctures of filmmaking, you have to look at a film like Blood Rage and say, this is what we can do with a low budget.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very low budget film, but excellently written.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent sound. And I want to talk. The reason I bring up sound again is because Richard Einhorn is who did the score for Blood Rage. And Richard Einhorn, he had started off basically in horror film. He did composing for Shockwaves. Don't Go in the House is a film that, if you can find it, watch it. Excellent. Eyes of a Stranger, The Prowler. And then he started to mellow out a little bit before hitting Blood Rage and Dead of Winter. He also did a few episodes of Tales from the Dark Side, the mid-80s series. But then he started, you know, mellowing out a little bit, which, you know, he made his money and just started doing what he wanted. I guess he was just taking on all gigs, did a lot of National Geographic stuff as well. But Richard Einhorn outdid himself in Blood Rage. And from the beginning to the end, you remember the sounds of these scores, okay? It's not Harry Manfredini, but it stands out on its own. A kind of poorly acted film was Blood Rage, but the writing, the score, and the plausibility of the film just kind of drives it home. You know, you got the opening, the cold open, where they're in the drive-in movie theater, which I don't know if we're going to see a modern film start out like that anymore. So those are fewer and further between. They just closed the local drive-in theater here where I live. I'm just north of Nashville, Tennessee, by the way. Yeah, so we're kind of far apart, but not so much. You're what?
I'm probably about 7 hours away from you. I actually have a buddy. He's one of our associate producers for Slash Nurse, Jimmy Presley. He lives out in that neck of the woods. I actually went to go visit him last year, actually, just to say hi to him.
Well, yeah, that come down again. Make sure you say hey to me too.
Oh, you know it.
The local drive-in, man, just closed down after years of being in operation. Totally depressed about that. But this film opens up with basically a mom and a boyfriend watching a film with two, I don't know, like 12-year-old kids in the back who you probably shouldn't be getting freaky in the car with the two of them in the middle seat, but they're doing it. Mom's kind of a hornball. And, you know, the boyfriend there, he was just, you know, not really respecting those boundaries. So the kids slip out. One of them grabs a hatchet and hacks a guy to pieces as he's doing the hibbity-dibbity with his girlfriend in the backseat of their vehicle, where I guess nothing goes on in this drive-in except for getting busy, you know. And basically, this traumatizes the other twin brother into basically being a mute. And the killer hands the hatchet over to the mute brother. He has no way of saying, no, it wasn't me. It was my evil brother here. And he gets put into a psychiatric hospital for years upon years. And this film is basically about him getting out to prove his innocence. And the evil brother's been living that life for so long. And I guess hearing upon his brother's escape, old habits rear their ugly heads. And this film is actually right now available on Tubi TV. I am very sure of that. I can post a link in the episode description to this episode, but I want everybody to see Blood Rage.
Honestly, now you mentioned it, I might go back and watch again. It was on Shudder, I think it was like 6-8 months ago or something like that.
Probably still is.
I know I saw it on there. I watched it, but now you're talking, I was like, you know, I kind of want to watch it again now that you're talking about it. Because, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I didn't watch it as much as, like, you know, the Friday the 13th or anything like that. But,
oh, sure.
But I mean, like, I remember that movie very fondly, like, and especially for a movie that was not one that I remember a lot. Because, like, you know, when you mentioned it to me, I was like, oh, yeah, the one about the twins.
We talked about it before you came on.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it rang my bell immediately, and I think one of the reasons why, which is kind of goes on with what you said, it was the story. It was a good premise. In a lot of ways, it was almost like a little bit of like a really twisted version of Freaky Friday, almost.
Yeah, I'll take that. Well, I don't know. Lindsay Lohan's kind of lived a nightmarish life, so maybe it's just a less twisted version of Freaky Friday. I don't know.
I'll bang on the redemption to look at.
Yeah, she is on the she's on the redemption road, so we'll give her the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
But Mike, you know, you're here to I wanted to talk about a couple of the films that you know, are very recent that you've worked on. And I mean, I guess, you know, we've got to take them one at a time, man. Go Away is a very cool film that it's been described as an intruder film with a twist. You know, I think what we can do is probably dive into the trailer. You want to dive into this trailer?
Oh, let's do it.
Yeah, let's talk about this trailer. You know, I don't know how many films I've reviewed that start off with a drive down a country road. Now, who are these handsome devils?
Life, they are also a boyfriend and girlfriend. Their names are Matthew Sharp and Christina Oswald. Matthew, you might recognize, he was our jock from Bloody Summer Camp.
Yes.
Christine, this is our first time working with Christine. We absolutely loved her to death. That guy right there, that is Zach. He was also in Bloody Summer Camp. He was Hampton, one half of the sex couple counselors. And you'll actually will see quite a few Slasher 15 alumni. If you watch our Slasher 15 films, you'll notice one from another. You'll usually see a lot of the same faces, but we always go out of our way to bring on new faces to go and be a part of it. And that's one reason I love working with them so much is, and everyone likes working for us, for that same matter, is we always have a great time on set. We have a lot of fun. We definitely take care of everyone very well. Everyone's going to have a place to stay. Everyone's going to have a full belly while they're on set and when they leave set. And above all, we're going to try our darndest to make the best film possible. Something that when we show it to, and it's not just the fans, but to them themselves, because they're devoting a lot of time and a lot of energy for us to make something special. So we want to make sure that our end product is something that they're going to look at and go, oh my God, I can't wait to show this to all my friends. Or even like, you know what? I can't wait to slap some of this on my highlight reel. I mean, just that alone means a lot to me because it means that how much they really enjoyed it and how much they liked it. And it makes us know that we did everything right as we could to make their experience the best we could possibly make it for them.
If you didn't, they wouldn't come back.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why you see some of the same familiar faces. But as the director, Dave Kerr, said that, you know, there's a lot of great other talent out there that just needs a chance. So that's another reason why, yeah, you're going to see a lot of the same faces come back again. But, you know, all of our films, I guarantee you, you're going to see some new faces that you haven't seen in our previous films, too, because we always like to try to give that new person a chance, give them a chance to be in our spotlight and be a part of our family and see what they can do. And because of that, we found other great talent along the way. Our Red Mask and Go Away, the leader of the band, the team, he is actually going to be working with us again on the Slasheners. Him and I are actually going to be playing the detectives who are trying to chase down the Slasheners. His name is Jerome. Absolutely phenomenal. I'm not sure if you've seen one of his other works. He was this crazy deranged clown in Brad Twigg's Fuzzy Monkey Freak Show. That was a great one. I also had a role in that one. I played a redneck cannibal named Till.
not far from reality, right?
Oh, come yeah. It's pretty much.
You just basically did like Jack Nicholson and played yourself, right? That's.
Yeah, but not to hype up Go Away or anything, but
hyping up.
Yeah, but this came off the cusp of us releasing Bloody Summer Camp, and like I said, I'm a diehard Friday the 13th fan, but even more about me, I'm a diehard, especially 80s camp or wood slasher. I love that genre. It's one of my all-time favorites. So Bloody Summer Camp already had a very soft spot in my heart. The fact that it was the first film I ever got to be a part of and act in, and also produce. It was also, we got to film it at a camp. We got Felissa Rose from Sleepaway Camp to be a part of that, which I grew up watching her. And then we got Dave Sheridan, who was also Duking Scary Movie, to be our sheriff. And I loved the scary movies growing up, too. So this is all just such warm my heart. And I was like, man, I just don't know if Go Away is going to hold that same level for me. And New Year's Eve, we had a small little Go Away, like little hangout cast party for New Year's. And the director decided to let us watch the rough cut, you know, minus the color grading and adding all the scores in yet.
Sure.
And I'm not going to lie to y'all, even with all that missing, I was in complete shock and awe at how much I enjoyed that film and how well paced it was. I mean, it just kept going and going and going, just like tension, like complete hysteria, massacre, tension. I mean, it's just, it's such a roller coaster ride. And then the celebrity cast we got. I mean, we got Tom Matthews from Friday 13th Part 6.
Yeah, we got to talk about that, man. This is a literal all-star team of a cast here, you know, in, including yourself. Tom Matthews, like you just said, Return of the Living Dead, Return of the Living Dead 2, Friday the 13th Part 6, Tommy Jarvis, Never Hike Alone, Never Hike in the Snow. He, you know, he comes back and I mean, he's been selfless and very generous with his time. What was it like working with Tom?
Oh God, it was so amazing. You know, when you watch like the trailer, you'll probably see like when they're at the dinner table, you see him take his hands and slam down the table. That was the very first scene he did in the entire film. And I can't say much because I don't want to give it away or any spoilers. Plus, the team will absolutely kill me if I do. But all I will say is he just had a very simple line, but it needed to come across extremely it just grabbed your attention. It was the first scene he did for us. And when he did that scene, not only did the entire crew just stop looking at each other with their eyes wide open, like, oh my God, the entire cast who's there at the dinner table were like, looking at you going, this is really happening. I mean, he just brought this presence on him. But don't get me wrong either. He was one of the nicest, friendliest guys. I mean, like, I actually picked him up from the airport for filming. And like one of the first things like he did, he was like, it's so great to work with you. He was like, have you read the script? I'm like, yeah, I read the script. He goes, that is a really good script. Dave Kerr is a really good writer. He's like, I really am enjoying this. Like, this thing's got layers to it. I'm like, you know, it's not just, hey, I'm here, snap, slab, stabby, stabby, death, death, and I'm gone. It's like, this thing actually has a buildup. It has logic, and even the buildups pay off later on. He's like, this is really well done. And I think that one of the most memorable things I remember about him, it was our final night of filming with him. We got done a little late. We had some hiccups like any film set does. We got delayed a little on that day on filming. Tom, not only did he never make a peep, we end up wrapping up with him. I think it was probably like a little after like midnight, and his flight was the next morning. He had to, and we had to take him up to Dulles Airport, which where we were at. That was about an hour and 20 minute drive or so, all depending on traffic. And we had to get him there like at 9 a.m. And so so after he got done, I was like, oh well, Tom, like, you know, I'm sure you're probably really beat, man. He was like, you know, if you want, like, you know, you can grab your stuff. I'll take you back to your room, try and get some sleep. I'll be here ASAP first in the morning. I'll pick you up and I'll dash you there. And without missing a beat, because he was outside when I was telling this, he looked back inside the manor where we were filming and goes, well, what are they all doing in there? I'm like, oh, well, you know, we're out for the night. You know, they're all just kicking back, relaxing, having a couple of drinks. He's like, well, that sounds like a lot more fun. And he just walked right in the house. He had a ball cap on, like, and he turned it backwards like I have right now. And he was like, all right, guys, who's lining up the shot? And he ended up doing a couple of shots with the whole entire cast and crew. Then he did something even more remarkable at the end of all of this that made us all just fall in love with Tom even more. Like, we didn't think we could fall in love with him anymore. We noticed, I think it was like 2 days later, someone on our Go Away campaign bought an executive producer perk, and they had the name Tom Matthews. Of course, we're like, no. It's either someone's joking or punking us, or it's just a really, really crazy coincidence. So Dave, the director, reached out to Tom and asked Tom about it, and nope, Tom confirmed. He goes, oh, no, that was me. He's like, I really like the story. I really like the script, and I want my name on it. And so he actually bought a executive producer perk from our campaign so he could be our executive producer on Go Away.
What a selfless guy.
Exactly.
Who could ever have a bad word to say about Tom Matthews?
No, I mean, if someone did, I would. It would be one of those kind of cases where someone's like, oh, Tom's such a jerk. I'd probably be that guy who goes, well, what'd you do to him?
Yeah, what'd you do to him? You did something to Tom, you bastard. Yeah, that I'm with you, man. And I've only heard, you know, tales of his, you know, his generosity to those who he's worked with. And, I mean, you just further confirm it. Tom Matthews is a doggone saint. And, I won't hear a bad word about him.
Oh no. I mean, like, and like, he was so great and nice and sweet to like everyone, like on the set, like, Like it was, you know, it was just everyone like you know, his like his buddy and stuff. You know, he never even gave it a second thought. You know, I like he absolutely was constantly complimenting my wife because my wife actually when we do our filming, my wife actually does all home cooked meals at our house, and she brings them to set for everybody. Like, you know, lasagnas, baked ziti's, chicken and mashed potatoes, taco bars. Like, you know, it's always an array because, you know, we want to give someone a little bit more special than just say, yeah, we order some pizzas for the fifth time this week, you know?
Sure, sure.
And Don was always complimenting, like, you know, Jamie, like on her food. He asked for a couple of her recipes and stuff.
so hopefully she didn't give them to him.
She definitely gave him the upside down strawberry shortcake. He really liked that one a lot.
Oh, yeah, I'm not coming away without that one. That, yeah, good call on that. Man, Tom Matthews is a doggone saint. But, you know, I think one of the hardest working ladies in horror right now is Felissa Rose.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, she's been in everything lately. And of the highest and lowest budgets, she's working hard. She's basically become the Justin Long of independent film recently because he was, you know, he went on like a 3-year run there where he was just in everything. It seems like I've seen her name everywhere with different directors, not just, you know, yeah, not just what we're talking about today. Numerous guests that I've had on the last few weeks have mentioned Felissa Rose in their films. So she's one busy lady. What was it like working with her?
Oh, geez. Felissa, if you've watched our Slasher 15 track record, you'll probably see a common denominator in all of them as of late between Blaze Summer Camp, Go Away, and the Slasher Nurse. They all have Felissa. And yeah. Felissa is kind of turned into our like unofficial fifth member of the Slasher 15 crew with Dave Kerr, his wife Amber, my wife Jamie, and myself. She's kind of become that staple for us as well, but she does so much more for us behind the scenes that I don't think most people would know unless you worked with her. You would know. Like one thing I love about Felissa so much is her attitude. She like when you meet her at the cons, like, you know, she's all happy and go lucky, and you know, I know some people out there would probably be a little concerned or question like, well, yeah, you're like this at the cons because, you know, you're trying to be nice to people. You want them to buy your autographs and then and your photo ops and all that stuff. And there is some truth to that. But I will also vouch for Felissa in the most highest level. But that, no, it's not just that with her. Like, she's the exact same way on set. And myself and a lot of Slasher 15 crew and cast have all hung out with Felissa after cons when we would go out and have some drinks together. We've done karaoke at some of the events together and stuff and hung out together. She's the same way across the board wherever you go. And what I love most about her and when it comes to the filming, it doesn't matter what your film is. It could be a $3,000 film. It could be a $60,000, $70,000 budget film. She's going to give you the same energy and the same level of treatment for either one of them. It doesn't matter which one it is. And what's great with her, too, is she also networks with all of her friends. With Blaze Summer Camp. Felissa Rose was the one who brought up, you know, if you're trying to find a good sheriff to bring in here, you know, my good buddy Dave Sheridan, I think he'd be great for this role. You want to check him out? And we talked to Dave, and Dave was just absolutely hysterical across the board. I mean, even just talking to him, we were just in stitches, just dying laughing. We knew right off the bat, this guy's going to be our comedy relief, and he's going to steal the show. And boy, did he ever. And then even with Go Away, Robert Mukes, I know Felissa mentioned Robert to us. And if I'm not mistaken, I also believe she is the one that mentioned us with Elsie Holt from You're Next.
Yeah.
As well. And he was great to work with as well. Actually, they all were. I don't know why he wasn't. They all were great to work with.
Except for this guy over here. He was the worst.
If that was Dave saying right now, he'd probably be pointing at me.
No, I don't believe it for a minute. But, you know, it's funny Elsie Holt was in this because Your Next is kind of in the same vein as go away, or, you know, or vice versa, rather. Your Next is one of my favorite home invasion flicks. I mean, it is solely responsible for my adding Looking for the Magic to every playlist I ever put together. And yeah, when I think about that song, I see that opening scene. I see them coming back to that house out in the woods, and that record just continuously playing on a loop. And yeah, it reminds me of that film every time I hear it. And it's a good thing, because it features one of the most badass final girls there ever was. And I believe her name is Sharni Vinson.
Mm-hmm.
Little gal. I believe she's either a New Zealander or Australian. I don't want to say the wrong one, so I'm going to say them both.
I want to lean towards New Zealand, but I could be wrong.
So do I. Yeah, but then I start thinking New Zealand, and then I think, wait a minute, Zoe Bell's from New Zealand, and maybe I'm mixing up the two. They could both be from New Zealand. But yeah, badass gal, badass film, and you've got one of the badasses from said film in Go Away. Also, Tuesday Night is in Go Away. And when I was reading the cast, I said I had to give a double take, because I mean, that's such an interesting pickup, because Nightmare on Elm Street 4 is, you know, my favorite one, even more than part 3, which is, seems to be the consensus favorite for a lot of Nightmare diehards. But having Tuesday Night, you know, I guess I didn't want to know about working with Tuesday Night.
That was a big one. I can't verify it for any stretch of the means, but I mean, like, I definitely think like a little bit of that was I have a really it was my childhood crush. I met her at a New Year's Poppin' Rock in Gettysburg. I think it was 2 years before we started filming Go Away. It may have been less than that. It may have only been like a year before we started filming Go Away. And yeah, I mean, like, I went over to go meet her and everything, and like, I was just all sorts of like bashful. I was blushing, and I actually had a Rocket raccoon stuffed animal backpack I was wearing, and she's like, "Oh, that's the most adorable thing." She's like, "Can I hold it and hug it?" And I'm like, "Yeah, of course, here."
Hey, when in Rome, you do as the Romans do, right? Just let it happen.
Now, I will say, Tuesday actually was interested in being with us for Blaze Summer Camp. The only problem we had with that one was, by the time we got around to connecting with her, we were already deep into filming, and there really wasn't like any spots open that would have been a good fit for her.
Sure.
So it was kind of like, yeah, crap, we can't get her in this one. Too bad. It would have been great. But then we made sure that we got her in our next one, Go Away, just to let her know that, hey, we weren't able to get any play to summer camp, but we were thinking about you.
Sure. Yeah. Listen, when there's space, and where there's not, there's not. And you don't want to shoehorn it in there and make it seem like maybe a disingenuous film. Just, you know, star power for the sake of star power. But she's a star on any screen that she's on, man. And very cool that you had her in here. And like I said, I gave a double take to that cast list, and I said, wait a minute, not Tuesday Night. Come on. But that was really cool. And then, you know, you've got Jeremy Spencer from Five Finger Death Punch, Psychosexual, The Macabre. Mm-hmm. You guys really put together a special film here. And if you couldn't tell from the trailer, very much suspense, drama inducing, and I'm sure not short on the blood and beatdowns.
Oh,
if you can't wait to see this one.
Play summer camp. I'm not one to put the cart before the horse, but seeing I got to watch the rough draft, I will tell you one thing. If you all love the special effects from the gore in Blaze Summer Camp, you ain't seen nothing yet. And that's all I'm going to say.
Well, okay, so I got to know. You've brought up the name Slasher 15 Productions. I think it only benefits the crowd, the listening audience, to know who are Slasher 15 Productions.
Oh, Special Opinion Productions is ran and owned by Dave Kerr. He, The Slash and Earth will be his fifth full feature length film. His first one was actually The Curse of the Slash and Earth. Back in the day, he had no budget, had minimal money. He got all his friends to go make the film. And then he did a sequel to that called Return. And then after Return, that's when he went on and did Blaze Summer Camp. And Blaze Summer Camp to go away to Slashers is when he started to progressively see much better support and budget than he did for his first two films. And that's one of the reasons why we're doing the Slashers. We wanted to give the Slashers the same love and the same treatment that Blaze Summer Camp and Go Away got. And now that Sasha Patinas is more established now, we get a lot more funding. We have a better fan base, not a better fan base, but we have a more of a fan base is the better word I should use. Because a lot of our fan base there from Curse is still with us to this day and still giving us lots of love and support, which means because, you know, it's always great to get a lot of support on a crowdfunder. But when you see a lot of the same people coming back every time you're doing a film to keep doing it, you know you're doing something right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. But yeah, it's ran by Dave Kerr and actually his wife, Amber. She's also one of the producers. She is our special effects artist.
And Amber Fulcher.
Yep. And she does also some acting as well. She is our Pink Mask in Go Away. And she is our Slasher Nurse in The Slasher Nurse. She actually was in Curse of the Slashers, Dave's very first film. She also had a role in that one as well. And then the other producers for it are myself and my wife, Jamie Wiseman. We're based out of Orange, Virginia, but we do all of our filming in and around the Charlottesville, Virginia area, and all kind of surrounding areas. Slash and Earth is our first one where, like, we're really going to be kind of all over the place a little bit. We ran out of hospital, so we're going to Richmond to do the hospital scenes. And then we have a cabin out in Front Royal. We'll be filming cabin scenes out there. And then we have like a church and a bar that we also ran out for the movie that are the bar, I believe it's either in Orange or Culpeper. It might be in that little sub area because there are two counties right next to each other. I can't remember where the church is. I want to say the church might be in Orange County. But yeah, we generally film in and around the Charlottesville, Virginia area. But we've already casted for our sixth full feature length film, but we won't be crowdfunding for that until either the end of this year or the beginning of next year. And we still get done filming the Slashers. Originally, the sixth one is called Awfully Strange Night. Originally, that was going to be our fifth one, but that one even needs more locations and more effects and more setups. And we came to realize that's going to take a lot more time to do. And we didn't want to wait. We really wanted to make something this summer and we really wanted to get back to work and making more films. So that's when we decided to, hey, let's just do the Slashers. And funny story about that too. We were debating in the beginning that we may not even do a crowdfunder. Like we were thinking like, well, you know what, we got a more seasoned crew. We got, you know, a lot of good seasoned actors, and all of them were happy to come on board and help out Dave to show their appreciation because they all love Dave to death. He's a great director. He's a great friend. He's one of those guys that once you work with him, he looks after you. If he thinks that you might be you might be getting in something that might hurt you or whatever, but you know. He's never going to tell you what to do or what not to do, but what he will say is like, hey, you know, I've heard some things going on here. Just be careful. That's all I'm going to say. If you need any advice or anything or any help or anything, come talk to me. Another reason I love Dave, too, because, of his success with crowdfunders, other directors have hit him up in the past asking him for advice. A lot of directors would be very snooty and be like, well, no, I had to do all the hard work and I had to figure it all out for myself. You figure it out. But that's not Dave. Dave will sit down and talk to anybody and help them and give them advice on their crowdfunder to make them in hopes to have a more successful crowdfunder. Like, the key tricks of what works. Sometimes it's about Dave. Sometimes it's about the setup of your campaign. But Dave will break it all down for you, and he's happy to help you out with that. As far as giving you advice goes, of course.
I've heard that about Dave.
but
I have heard that about Dave, just being the most helpful guy in the world. And, I don't know Dave personally, but, we have countless to somebody from Tennessee because it's a high number. We have a lot of mutual friends, and I've heard good things about Dave, and just to hear you confirm that is all the proof that I need. But guys, what we're here to do today is, we're asking for those who are inclined to do so to help us get these films fully funded for post-production costs on Go Away and pre-production costs on Slasher Nurse. And we're not just asking for handouts. There are a lot of great perks that are going to be coming your way if you go to those respective Indiegogo campaigns. And we've got the links in both links, as a matter of fact, in the episode description right now. All you got to do is put that in your browser and you're going to find what you're looking for. Either or both, man. There are a lot of great perks out there to be had. Depending on which tier of donation, you can handle, you're going to have something coming back to you. And, just like the executive producer all the way down to a special thanks, there's no donation that's too little to help these films get put on screen. And the Slasher Nurse, man, if that title doesn't do it for you, nothing will. But this is a remake or like an upgrade of a previous film, right?
It's actually almost at this point, it's a complete reboot because we're actually, in some ways, we're actually doing Dave's original story because, as I said earlier, Dave had to use his friends and just local people just to try to fill in to do the roles. And there was a lot of problems. A lot of people were not showing up when they were supposed to or not show up at all. And that forced Dave to have to do a lot of on-the-spot rewrites to make it work to the point where it really came out to not really the story that he originally wrote. And this is now kind of what he's getting finally out of this, but even more so. Because, like I said, we weren't even thinking about doing any go-go on this one. And then we're like, all right, fine, you know what? We'll throw up a $10,000 one. If we get $10,000, it'll be great for special effects. We can really up the gore, make it look really awesome. Maybe get a location or two. And if we're really lucky, maybe get a celebrity. And, we were not expecting what we received in return. I think we are, less than $200 or a little over $200 away from now hitting 47,000.
That's great. And
yeah, we are still in shock and all because we did not expect that. I mean, Dave will even tell you, I'm the most happy-go-lucky, optimistic guy on everything except our crowdfunders. I'm the most pessimistic guy.
No, it's easy to be that way, man. It's so easy to be that way. I've seen there are guests who have come on here whose, I guess, films just didn't work out for whatever reason because of funding. But, sometimes I think that donations aren't going to the project themselves. They're going to the people that are running those projects. And that's why when I ask you to come on, it's only secondary to hear about the project itself. It's only secondary to hear about what did Tom Matthews do. What is primary is to know Michael McGlynn and just knowing the beautiful guy that he is. Oh. Oh, shush. Just shush. I don't want to hear it. But, just knowing that you can give some help to people that you genuinely like is rewarding in itself. Like, sure, we're going to help get a film made, but at the same time, we're going to help this guy who wants to get this film made, get this film made. And I tell you what, you're an easy guy to talk to. You're an easy guy to want to support. And it's just, it's a no brainer. Go out, click the links and give a little bit to these projects. You're going to love them. You know, David, he's stand-up guy. See, I should have blown that up. Just really big. You know? But yeah, do it, man. You got some really cool cast, but you've also got some really cool crews working on these things, like Owen Young. Okay, Owen Young's a badass. Owen Young will sneak into your home in the middle of the night, slap you silly, make himself a bologna sandwich, kiss your wife, and sneak back out the window, and you will thank him for it. That's how good he is. Okay, and he's doing cinematography in this one. And if you couldn't tell from the trailer, because he did the same thing on Go Away. If you couldn't tell, fantastic work. And you know, he's doing some magic. You got Richard Bergen working sound. Listen, Rich Bergen, he wrote and directed this film called Fang. Okay, and Fang, like we've all seen the Bitten by the Wolf or Bitten by a Vampire or Bitten by a Spider or what have you, and you turn into that. Well, he's got a film called Fang where I don't know if I've ever seen a protagonist who's bitten by a rat and turns into, a rat. But that's what Bergen did with Fang, and it's fun. So, I mean, if you can, check this one out, guys. Talented sound guy, though. And he's on board for Slasher Nurse.
Yes.
I've got my eyes on the Slasher Nurse poster, if I'm being honest about it. I like a good movie poster, and that the one that I saw is beautiful. We could run down the perks all day, but hit the links, guys. Hit the links and go check out these perks. It's going to be very helpful to our filmmakers, our actors, our cast, our crew. But, Mike, what say you? We ride off into the sunset, but before we do, tell everybody where they can find you on your socials.
Oh, best, easiest place to get a hold of me is on my Facebook page at Michael McGlynn. I am also one of the admins on the Slasher 15 Productions LLC page on Facebook. I am a Slasher. I'm a Michael _ Slasher 15 Productions on Instagram. I have Twitter, but I wouldn't bother. I'm never on that thing.
I looked for you there. I couldn't find you.
I think I went. I've done one tweet on there one time, and it was "Restore the Snyderverse."
I'm sure it was beautiful. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna find it. I'm gonna retweet it just for the hell of it. But guys, as always, we at Slasher Sports want to thank you for tuning in. Giving your time to us. And I mean, when we host a talent such as Michael McGlynn in Slasher Sports Cinema, we stand behind their work and truly want to see them succeed. So help support these films if you're a lover of horror film. I mean, it's easy to dish out a few bucks and go see the big Hollywood productions. But I mean, it takes real guts to put your time and effort into independent horror. And, you know, they work their asses off to bring you some gruesome tales of murder and survival. You know, but let's show them some love. And as always, guys, you know, may you go forth and drink the blood of your enemies from the skulls of their children. Mike, peace, my man.
Peace, brother.